Well, good morning and welcome to the Mount, regardless of what campus you happen to be joining us at this morning, whether you are here at our Stafford campus, down at Fredericksburg, whether you are out in Bealeton or joining us online, wherever you happen to be. You picked an exciting day to be with us today, as today is a day that I've sort of been planning and thinking and praying about and just looking forward to for several months now for the life of our church. And today what I want to do is I want to introduce you, maybe for the first time, or if you've been here for a season, maybe reintroduce you to two strategic partners that we have here at the Mount. One is a local outreach partner in all of our local communities where our campuses are, and the other is a global missions partner that happens to be doing ministry in Africa. And so I'm excited about that. But before we do that, I wanna just kind of pause and maybe take a moment and acknowledge that this coming week is a big week for our country. If you're not aware, Tuesday is Election Day. I'm sure you're aware, but just in case. I just want to say I recognize that at a church our size, across all of our campuses and wherever we are, there can be a lot of varying emotions and feelings and thoughts as we move into Tuesday during election season. Maybe you are here today at one of our campuses and you are like, you know, on the edge of your seat, you're leaning in, you're just waiting for those results to start coming in because you believe with everything in you that Tuesday night or Wednesday morning or however long it takes will define the future of our country in many ways. Maybe you are here today and you're just tired. Like you're burned out, you're worn out, you've kind of stopped watching the news for like the last 30 days and you're just ready for it to be over with. Maybe you are here today and you voted early and you knew who you were voting for. Maybe you know who you're voting for, but you're waiting till Tuesday and you wanna wait in line and exercise that right then. Maybe you are on the fence and you know you're gonna vote on Tuesday, but you don't know who you're voting for yet. Or maybe you are even wrestling internally with your conscience of if you are even going to vote this year. Can I just take a minute and not speak to all of that? But maybe just zoom us out for a second and remind us of a truth that many of us all know, but I think it's good to just be reminded of at times, and that is this: God is in control. Is that okay to say, like, God is in control? And let me just read a couple verses for you to maybe help you feel at ease as you move into Tuesday. This one's from Daniel chapter 2. Verse 20 and 21, it says it this way: praise the name of God forever and ever, for he has all wisdom and power. He controls the course of world events. It is he who removes kings and sets up other kings. Paul in the New Testament says it this way in Romans 13:1, and a lot of times we don't like the first part of this verse, but it says, everyone must submit to governing authorities. But then the second part: for all authority comes from God, and those who are in positions of authority, they have been placed there by God. And so can I just maybe encourage you? God is in control. God will not wake up Wednesday morning and be surprised. You might be, I don't know where you fall, but God will not be, because God is sovereign, and he is wise, and he is good, and he does what he wants, the way he wants, even when it makes sense and even when it doesn't make sense. And so can I just encourage you? God is in control. I would love to pray for our country as we move into Tuesday. Would you join me? Father, we are so humbled and honored that we have the opportunity and the privilege to even cast a vote. We recognize that there are a lot of places in our world right now where people do not have that privilege. We recognize that there are a lot of Christians who do not have that privilege. There are a lot of times in your redemptive history where you have set up kings and rulers and authoritative regimes, and you have set up dictators, and you have set up democracy, and all of these different forms of government at different times in different places for different seasons, God. But we just acknowledge and we are humbled by the fact that you allow us the privilege to exercise our voice if we so choose. God, we pray that regardless of what happens on Tuesday or Wednesday or maybe even the week after if it takes that long, God, we acknowledge that you are in control and we can trust that. God, I pray for me and for our church specifically, I pray that as we move into Wednesday morning, as the election starts to begin behind us, that we would remember that the very people on Tuesday who were our enemies, the people who we thought were wrong and were ruining everything, those people are the very people that you may put in our paths on Wednesday morning for us to share the gospel with. God, I pray that our vote does not ruin our chance to love our neighbor. God, that we would remember that there is greater things than a ballot, that you have called us to be your ambassadors for your kingdom and your will. God, we praise you. Amen. Well, today we are in the final week four of a series titled Neighboring. And what we've been doing for this last month is we have been looking, kind of centering ourselves around some of the words of Jesus found in Matthew chapter 22, where Jesus is answering a question by a ruler, a religious elite near him. And he's asking him, like, what's the thing I need to know? If you look at all the Old Testament, all the laws, all of those commands, what's the thing I need to know? And Jesus says in Matthew 22, verse 37 through 40, he says this to them. He says, you need to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Jesus says, first and foremost, you need to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your intellect, all your passions, all your emotions, all your will, all your strength. Love the Lord your God. That should be a primary. But I think maybe Jesus knew that sometimes, even as good Christians who believe in Jesus and follow him, sometimes we can really love God and want to learn a lot about him and know a lot about him, but only to keep it to ourselves. And he says, so the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. For all of the law and all of the prophets, all of the commands of the Old Testament hang on these two commandments. And so as we've worked our way through this series, we've said that the Bible, both the Old and the New Testament, have this cohesive message through them, through all 66 books, where we are commanded, we're told as those of us that are followers of Jesus, that we are to love our neighbor. And so what we've been doing is we've been sort of looking at these areas, if you're joining us for the first time, these areas of our lives where Jesus doesn't define what a neighbor is, but instead he tells the action of what a neighbor should do, and which means that every single human being who has ever been made in the image of God who lives on this earth right now is considered our neighbor in the theological eyes of God. And so we've been sort of expanding our concept of neighboring. And we began in week one by talking about the literal neighbor who lives right next door. And we talked about what it looks like to love them well, to go and get to know them, to invite them over, to be hospitable the way God is a hospitable God who leaves his comfort and steps down into our mess. We talked about this idea of throwing block parties, because when we read in scripture, Jesus was this guy who went to people and threw parties and he celebrated and he ate with people who were not like him and invited them into his warmth so that he could share his message with them. And we want to be those type of neighbors. Then we expanded that and moved from just next door, and we talked about the neighbors in our city, the people in our city who have less than us, the impoverished, people who are living in poverty, and how God has called us to reach out to them and to care for them. And last week, we expanded that circle even broader and talked about the neighbor who lives across the world. And we talked about this idea that maybe God is calling us as sent people to go and serve people. And what I want to do today is I want to kind of close out our series by talking about a special group of neighbors, if you will, that can be found in all three of these neighborhoods, and that is the neighbors that I'm going to call vulnerable children. And as we do this, if you're taking notes, I think it's important for the theological background to hear, it's important to know that a central theme of the biblical story is God being a father to the fatherless. We see this all throughout the Bible. Sometimes it says it explicitly, other times it kind of says it in a roundabout way, but there's this consistent theme that God wants to be the father to those that are fatherless. Let me just give you a couple of examples found in the Old Testament. In Psalm chapter 68, it says this: he is a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows. This is God whose dwelling is holy. God places the lonely in family. I love the imagery there. God is the one Through his sovereign hand, his will, his control, he is the one that places the lonely in families because he is a father to the fatherless. Psalm 146 says it this way, "The Lord protects the foreigners among us. He cares for the orphans and widows, but he frustrates the plans of the wicked." God cares about the fatherless. And this theme, even though it's there, it really sort of explodes in the New Testament when Paul and Romans and some of the other letters in the New Testament begin to talk about this idea that humanity, human beings, we were separated from God. It's what we call the gospel, the good news that is the story of Jesus. We were separated from God, but God in his love sent his son to die for us. He sent him to earth as a sent one to save and redeem and rescue us. And by his redemption of us, we were brought into the family of God. We were adopted in because God was caring for us as fatherless people who were spiritually separated from him. God cares for you and I, whether we have earthly fathers and mothers or not, because we were all spiritually lost at one point in our life, and he stepped in to redeem us and rescue us. God cares for the fatherless. In fact, this idea of God being a father to the fatherless is such a central theme throughout the biblical story that a defining characteristic of the early Christians in the early church was their care for vulnerable children. It was what defined them. It was what they were known for. In fact, if you go back and look at the ancient Roman culture that the first century church was sort of birthed out of, what you find is it was an atrocious culture. And I don't know where you are on your views of America right now. You may say America's great and it's awesome and things are going well and it's the best place I've ever been. Or you may say, man, this country has a lot of problems right now and here's all the things that could be wrong and fixed and changed. I don't know where you are, but let me just tell you what you see in America pales in comparison to the atrocities that were taking place in ancient Rome. And in fact, let me just give you an example that relates to what we talk about caring for vulnerable children. In ancient Rome, there was a legal practice known as exposing or abandoning. And what would happen is protected under ancient Roman rule, ancient Roman law, if you had a child and for some reason you decided you did not want this child, you could expose them to the elements. Now, the list of reasons of why you might be able to expose them was relatively vague. For instance, you may not have enough money to feed your family. So one more mouth to feed is too much. So you can have that baby and then expose it to the elements. You may decide that you had a girl and you did not want a girl because girls came with a dowry and a marriage payment and all these things, and you didn't want to have to deal with that, so you could expose that infant or that child to the elements. You may have said, "I simply just don't want this child. Enough is enough. My family and I are enough." So you could expose that child to the elements. Your child could have some sort of mental or physical disability and you don't want to deal with it. You could expose your child to the elements. And by exposing your child to the elements, what that looked like is you would literally take your child, whether it was an infant or a little bit older, and you would set it outside somewhere with the hope that three things would happen. One, the child would die from the weather. Two, the child would die from a wild animal. Or three, that a slave trader would find them and pick them up and use them as a slave. This was accepted common practice in ancient Rome. In fact, the practice of exposing was so severe in ancient Roman culture that what would happen was a father had a legal right that until his child was of age, in ancient Roman culture was different for men and women, but it's usually between the age of 13 and 16, that a father had a legal right that until his child was 13 or 16, he could kill them for any reason he felt valid killing them for. Children were not cared for. Children were not loved. This was the culture the early Christians birthed the church in. This is the culture that the church stepped into and became known as people who cared for vulnerable children. In fact, the early Christians were known for this so much that I found this interesting quote in his book called Destroyer of the Gods. This guy by the name of Larry Hurtado says this about the early Christians. He says their communities, their churches, their home gatherings, they were marked by unusual and even scandalous concern for the weak, for the orphans, for the widows, and the impoverished. Don't miss this. The early church spread like wildfire in such a way because the message of the early church was so countercultural, was so different to what was happening in society and what was taking place that what would happen was Christians were loving their neighbors so well, they were loving the vulnerable children so well that the people around them, the people in Rome, begin to notice and say, I don't know if I believe what they believe. They have one God, I have multiple. That doesn't make any sense to me. But what they are doing is so attractional that I'm going to ask questions, I'm going to lean in because they are caring for children that no one should be caring for, and they are showing me something about God and his faithfulness and his goodness that I'm going to lean in, and they begin to get converted and changed, and you see the entire world different because of their countercultural living and their love for vulnerable children and being defined by being neighbors who shared the truth. They were known for it. Now, I'll just be really transparent with you. I pray that 100 years from now, 200, 500, 1,000 years from now, when historians are reflecting back on the 21st century American church, I pray and hope they are able to say that about us. But my concern or my fear is they will say something like this. Yeah, they cared for vulnerable children. They debate about it all the time. Yeah, they care for vulnerable children. They voted the right way. Yeah, they care for vulnerable children. I saw their Facebook post about it. Yeah, they care for vulnerable children. They talked about how much children matter and how much children are important all the time. But yet, it's as if they didn't do anything. Church, we are called to care for children. We have been talking for 4 weeks now about the command to love our neighbors. And one of the most practical, life-changing, attractional ways that we can be countercultural in this is to love the children around us who are vulnerable. All throughout Scripture, we see it. Isaiah 1:17 says it this way. It says, learn to do good. Seek justice, help the oppressed, defend the cause of orphans, fight for the rights of widows. James 1:27 says, pure and genuine religion in the sight of God the Father means caring for orphans and widows in their distress and refusing to let the world corrupt you. So here's what I want to do. I want to close out our series today. Like I said, I'm super excited about today by just giving you a couple of ways that I think as a church we can lean in and maybe step into caring and loving for vulnerable children in our midst. And I want to acknowledge that many of you might be already doing this. And so as a church, we are so thankful for you. But I think you'll see in some of these statistics that there is a lot of room for a lot of us. And so how can we get involved in being a good neighbor to vulnerable children? The first thing, if you're taking notes, is through foster care. It's through foster care. We have a partner. I told you I wanted to introduce or reintroduce you to two of our partners. One of our local partners is known as Project Belong. And Project Belong is centered here in Northern Virginia. And they do work in every county that we have a campus in and even north all the way up to D.C. And they're doing incredible work of helping churches and families and individuals become aware of the need of foster care, not just in Virginia, but in our area in Northern Virginia. And they have some really good programs. And I just want to let you know of some ways that you might be interested in getting involved. The first thing is this, is maybe you need to foster a child. And I know you're like, whoa, right out of the gate, Adam. Like, yeah, there's not really any easier. I can't really like ease into that, right? Like you knew it was coming. I said foster care. It's not like I'm not going to say foster a child. I just want to let you know this. If you take just a 20-minute radius from the campuses that we have, Fredericksburg, Bealton, and Stafford, right? If you draw a 20-minute radius around each campus, there are 165 kids in foster care within a 20-minute radius of every campus. 25% of kids in foster care currently are awaiting placement in a home, which means, don't miss this, church, 50 families is all it would take to eliminate any waiting child in foster care in our communities. That is less than 5% of our attendance this morning. We could literally change our community. Just like that. The average time, and I know what you're thinking, Well, that's a long commitment. The average time, it could be, right? The average time they're in foster care is 20 months, but you never know. The Lord may give you one that stays for 18 years. I'm not going to make it easy on you, right? I just want to let you know that's a possibility. Maybe you're not ready for that. Through Project Belong, another thing you can do is you can come along inside and support an existing family that is already fostering. Because just because they said yes to the call to foster, which is not for everyone, but they said yes, doesn't mean it's like, well, God told us to do this and things are super easy. No, it's still difficult. They're still hard. It's still moments. You can provide meals for them. You can hang out with that family. You can help be a community care person. You can be involved in supporting that family who has answered the call that God has placed on their heart. Another thing that they have at Project Belong, and I love this one, they have this program called the Don't Go Alone program. And the Don't Go Alone program is where you can become a mentoring adult or a mentoring family for a kid who is aged out of the foster care system. What I mean by that is they were in foster care and they, for whatever reason, did not go back to their biological family, but they didn't get adopted either. So they went through the system and at 18, they aged out. And let me just tell you this, 20% of all kids in foster care will age out without one single forever connection for the rest of their life. That means, don't miss this, that means 20% of kids in foster care will age out and every holiday not have a person who has been in their life to share it with. When the big moments like a wedding comes up, they have no family to invite. You can be a mentor. You can step into that gap. And listen to some of the statistics you can make just by being there with them forever and mentoring them. Over 80% of all boys who age out of foster care will end up in prison in 5 years. 70% of girls who exit foster care will become pregnant within the first year of exiting foster care. 50% of those girls will have, or they will have their kids, and then 50% of their kids will enter foster care before the age of two, creating this cycle that just continues over and over and over. As a church, we can step in and be a mentor for them, invite them over to Thanksgiving when they have nowhere to go, to Christmas with our families. We can pour into them, guide them, shepherd them, and lead them. There is a tremendous opportunity here. So we can foster. The second thing is through adoption. Now, I'm not gonna say a lot about this one because I firmly believe that if the Lord is gonna speak to you about adoption, he's gonna speak to you, and I'm not gonna convince you to go make a life-changing adoption decision this morning. So I'm just gonna say this because adoption has its difficulties and its strengths. As a family who has adopted, there are ups and there are downs, but I want you to just hear some of these statistics. Domestically within the United States, there are 120,000 children waiting for their forever family. Internationally, there are 20 million children waiting for someone to adopt them. Every year, another 2 million are added to that number. Now, 20 million sounds like a lot. That is less than 1% of Christians in the world. If less than 1% of the global church decided to adopt, there would not be another single orphan in the world. In fact, it's interesting when you look at statistics. Years ago, there was a historic moment in the life of our country when Roe v. Wade was sort of overturned and churches were celebrating this as a victory and this monumental moment in the life of God's people and the church and our country and whatever you feel on either side of the spectrum. What I want you to see is what happened was there was this celebration in this historic moment and a moment where the Christians in America, the people who believe in Jesus should have stepped up and done something, actually backed up. The number of adoptions in our country dropped from 25,000 a year to less than 1,500. Right at the time when there are more and more kids entering foster care and being orphaned. If we value life, we must value it at all ages. We must value life from birth to death. Children matter. And third, another way we can get involved is through sponsorship. I said I wanted to introduce you to two partners. One was a local partner and one is a global partner we have. And so across all of our campuses, I want to introduce you to the director and one of the founders of Harvesters Reaching the Nations. Would you do me a favor and give a big kind of mount welcome for Mama Lily?
Good morning. I appreciate you allowing me to share some of my story with you. Some of you have heard it before and some of you haven't. I apologize if there's parts of it that seem kind of heavy, but it's reality over there in Sudan. It all started in 1999. My husband and I were faithfully serving God in our church. And I just felt like we weren't reaching beyond the community that we were in. And your pastor mentioned that this morning. And my husband and I began to really pray and fast and ask God, what is the heartbeat of the church? What is it really, God? Show me through the eyes of Jesus. And God began to lay the orphans, the vulnerable, the widows, and the poor on my heart. And I believe that God actually ordained my steps. I went and heard a speaker sharing in Florida at the time. It was a women's convention. There were 12,000 women that were there. And one of the workshops, they were talking on Sudan, is what it was called at that time, and all the atrocities that were there. The North and the South were in civil war. They were coming down to the South and taking babies and putting them in gunny sacks alive and throwing them in the Nile, cutting women's breasts off so they couldn't breastfeed their babies, poisoning water wells. And when I heard this, I was just so taken back and said, God, what can I do? What can I do? And I never expected God to answer me the way he did. He said, sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And I thought, how am I going to go home and tell my husband this? So I pondered it in my heart for about a week. And then I lived, ate, slept it. I was consumed with it. And I said, God, if this is just my emotions, take it out of my heart. But if this is you, let the fire burn in my heart and speak to Dennis because we're one. And it wasn't, when I shared it with Dennis at first, he says, I don't think so, Lil. He knows I love adventure. He said, if there was 12,000 women there, why were you the only one God spoke to? And I said, I don't know, honey. But anyways, God did work through this. And it was a matter within a year and a half, we started Harvesters Reaching the Nations. And we did go over there. We sold everything and moved over in 2001 full-time. And we're there for 14 years full-time. And now I make trips in for a month at a time every few months. But when we were there, we were living in a brick tukul, grass roof, just like all the locals. We never did this before. But we were being obedient to what God called us to do. And Caleb was the first orphan that was brought in. His mother died in childbirth. One out of women will die in childbirth today in South Sudan. And his father was a drunkard. And he brought him to the orphanage asking, you know, if we'd take him. And I'm like, we just arrived, you know. And anyways, he kept coming back. Caleb was 2 kilos, 4 pounds. And what we found out later, the deceased mother's family blamed Caleb and the father for her death. So they were planning on killing him. They had hung him upside down. And anyways, we ended up taking him, and it took us 9 years, even though we were in our late 40s, to legally adopt Caleb. So we adopted Caleb. He is a U.S. citizen. I'm proud to say that he is serving in the United States Army in the U.S. He's in Hawaii. He's married, and he has 2 children. So to God be the glory. He had a plan for his life, and I didn't know I was going to be part of it. But you never know what God, when you say, be careful when you say, God, what do you want me to do? But then as time went on, okay, we have the orphanage, and then we thought, all right, we need education, all right? We need a church, you know, to be sharing the gospel. Everything we do is centered around the gospel of Christ. So everything was started under the mango trees, and then we eventually knew that we needed a clinic, and as I mentioned, a primary school. So then we felt after a couple years, it was in 2009, that God started laying on our heart, the name is Harvesters Reaching the Nations. Let's take it, you know, a little further. And we started in 150 miles north of the first campus. It's in the Terkeka region, and it's all Mudari tribe, very tribal, They had spears and they were still half naked when we went up there. And our son actually, him and his wife Kim lived there for 12 years and kind of birthed that. And our son Lance, he was single when he went up there. And he bathed in the Nile, boiled the water, drank the Nile, and did his laundry in the Nile. And he just said, Mom, you know, I'm really kind of getting depressed being here by myself. I want a Christian wife. And, you know, when I travel around, I say, oh, you know, my son's looking for a Christian wife. You got to be called to South Sudan. Free tanning, free weight loss. You know, it was like... But lo and behold, God is so faithful. Again, when we encouraged our son Lance, God brought Kim from New Jersey. They met on the Nile. Well, now they've been married for 15 plus years and we have a grandson. So again, it's amazing what God, you know, can do. Through all that, we do basically orphan care, discipleship, and health care to the places that we're at. For the past 23 years plus, we've been in South Sudan. We've been so fortunate to be able to show Christ's love to more than 270 orphans that are still with or have been through our orphanage. Even those from various times, they left for various reasons, you know, even before. Many of the older children now, they're actually running both of our campuses now, so it's so rewarding to see the fruit of the labor, because when you're doing it, you're wondering, is this really going to work, God, you know? And now when I go back and see the older orphans, we have one that's a lawyer, he does all our legality work. Then we have clinical officers, nurses, teachers, drivers, mechanics, social workers, house, you know, they just wanted to get married and have children, so it's so encouraging to see what God will do when you say yes to whatever he wants you to do, because he is faithful. So today we're providing basic care to 110 precious orphans, and we just took in two new babies, just a couple days old. The mothers again died in childbirth. So it's been so rewarding to see our orphans when they leave our campus and they go look for a job after they're finished with education. Most of the time, they won't even interview them. If they're from Harvesters, they know their character. They know they love the Lord. I mean, you know, their work ethic is much better, work ethics. And it's just such a testimony for them to actually share in their own community their testimony of what Christ has done. Both in Yay and Terracake communities, we have a need for education to pave the way for the gospel. It opens the door. They're very open to the gospel of Christ. So we can have chapel in your schools, you know, and it's very encouraging to us. We began first helping to meet the needs through our Christian primary school, and then we actually created a Hannah Scholarship Program. That's for those that are secondary school, so it's like high school and above. Could be vocational training, it could be college, as I mentioned, some of ours that went on for many years. So we built and opened our secondary school in 2022, and we currently have 148 students there and a computer lab for them as well. Currently, Harvesters provides education to 1,100 students, and many of them, that's their only meal that they get. We provide health care to surrounding communities as well. We built a hospital in South Sudan in our Yay campus, and it's all African Indigenous RAN staff, so it's very encouraging. When I was there just a couple weeks ago, I was leaving, and we were driving to the airport. And I seen a boy walking miles away from our school. And I asked Loki, one of our orphans that was driving, what's this boy doing? He's got our uniform on, yellow and blue, and it's 8 miles. It was 4:30 in the morning. This boy got up to walk to our school, and school started at 7 o'clock. And I realized how important it's the gospel of Christ and his education that will help change that nation. So as they play this little short video, you'll see how excited they are to be able to have what you've helped provide. I just just want to say thank you so much to the Mount. You have faithfully been our partners for 17 plus years. You're the longest church partner that we have had. So God bless you. Thank you. I'll see you at the table outside. Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So as we close out this series, I just want to read this verse one last time. Jesus says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. For all the law and all of the prophets hang on these two commandments." So here's my question as we have gone through this series and talked about loving our neighbors. How does God want you to get involved? It's very simple. How does he want you to get involved? Is God, over the last month, has he been nudging you in the way that he does, pushing you, maybe pulling you to walk across the street and talk to your neighbor? Has he been convicting you to set aside a Saturday afternoon and go serve at a homeless shelter? Has he been challenging you to set aside a week of vacation and to live as a sent one and go across the globe on a week-long mission trip? Has he been probing you this morning about getting involved in foster care, adopting, or sponsoring a child in Africa who is an orphan or who has no education and is attending a school daily? How is God challenging you to get involved? I just want to close today by giving you a couple practical steps. Today, across all of our campuses, when I dismiss you, you can go into our lobbies and you can find a booth or a table for Project Belong. And if you are interested in asking questions about fostering and what that might look like, or coming alongside and supporting a foster family, or the mentorship program for kids that are aging out, you can go to that Project Belong table and ask the questions. If you're at our Stafford campus, it's kind of over by the kids' entrance over there. If you're at Fredericksburg, it's right out in the lobby there. Also, at all of our campuses, you'll find a big display for Harvesters Reaching the Nation, and you can find that in all of our lobbies, and you'll be able to go there, and that when you walk out there, you're going to see kind of on some card, like these hanging things, some cards that look like this. And you're going to see two different colors, and I want to just kind of describe these. So the orange cards are for kids who are students, and for $24 a month, you can ensure that they get an education. And you can see underneath here, there's like a bio about them, and you can read it and you can look at it. The green cards are $36 a month, and these are kids that are at the orphanage, and this supplies their education, their food, and all these different things. And you can, again, see the information there. And when you grab one of these cards, you can read their story, you can click on the QR code, and when you click on the QR code, it'll bring up a page that tells you more about their story. And from there, you can sign up to support them and be a part. And I do want to say, man, we would love to take every single card they have today and do what we can as a church. But I want to say this. If you're under 18, don't go take a card and sign up without talking to your parent. Just a general idea, maybe is a good thing. But man, I want to encourage you to go and do those different things, because here's my honest, I'll just be honest. It feels like right now in our world, there's a little bit of divisiveness and fighting and debating, and everything's centered around the election right now. There's always an enemy. There's always that person. There's always them. It's always us versus. And what if today, as a church, we stepped out of that negativity and did something exciting? What if we made a difference for one more child? If we changed their life forever? Church, go and be the church. You are dismissed.